now, a special dating tip from Brock Lesnar on how to pick up a woman at a singles bar.
You're here. I'm here. Let's do this! It's business time, baby.
The Solid Monster sounds off.
My client, Brock Lesnar, conquered the street!
This doesn't make any sense.
Your title belt is made of leather. You're not a real vegan.
Who's that? You haven't been beat up properly. Woo!
Welcome to episode 445 of the Solid Monster Sounds Off here for Sunday, June 12th, 2016. I am the Solid Monster. Before we move on here, I just want to say a few words about what's going on this weekend. Kind of a crazy weekend here in this country anyway, and it all seems to be centralized in the Orlando area, which of course Orlando is the site of next year's WrestleMania. Friday night, there was a shooting after a concert in Orlando. There was a former contestant from the TV show The Voice, 22 years old, female singer. I think she had just finished performing. She was signing autographs after the show for fans. Guy came up to her, shot her, and killed her for no apparent reason. And then this morning, I had actually been out for a client event. I had to wake up at 5 o'clock in the morning to go into the city for something over at NBC, which ended up getting canceled because of what's going on as we speak, as I record this, which is there's a whole bunch of press conferences going on for what appears to be the worst mass shooting in U.S. history, which took place this morning at a nightclub in Orlando. 50 people so far dead, many more injured, just a horrible situation. I'm not going to get into the politics of the whole thing and people already debating about guns and they're debating about this and that. I'm not going to get sucked into all that for the same reason that, you know, I answered a question not too long ago on this podcast. You know, why don't you talk about the presidential election? Because people lose their minds, and I want to keep that completely separate from what I do here and keep my thoughts, you know, mostly to myself, because I just don't want to get into it with people because people are nuts. So I don't want to really get too much into it, but I will say this, because you can post something on Twitter, as I did, just you know, mentioning what's going on, and it's amazing to see all of the tweets and all of the replies and then people getting into fights with each other and, you know, over, you know, we should pass gun laws, and then other people are of the belief, well, that's not going to solve anything. And, you know, I'm of the mindset that the reality is there is no easy solution to a problem like this. That's the sad thing. There's just no real single easy answer. And I don't really think that any of this is going to change anytime soon. The way I look at it, you know, a few years ago, you had a mass shooting at an elementary school here in this country. It was actually in Connecticut. And you had 26 and 7-year-olds slaughtered, gunned down in school by some 20-year-old kid who then offed himself. And people, of course, I mean, they couldn't wrap their heads around the fact. I mean, these are practically kindergarten kids, first graders, gunned down in school. Certainly, we can come together and come up with some kind of a solution. This has to stop. This has to end. And what happened? Absolutely nothing. Absolutely nothing happened. Again, whether you're of the mindset that it's guns, if you're of the mindset that people are just mentally ill and we have to overhaul that whole system in this country, wherever you fall on the spectrum, nothing happened. And so I look at this and I say, well, this is terrible. I mean, this was over twice as many people. Maybe not, they weren't little kids, but twice as many people, 50 people dead. You would think to yourself, my God, you know, certainly we have to come together and do something. Nothing is going to change. Nothing is going to change. This is just the world. This is the way it is. I mean, it's kind of depressing to think about it in those terms, and I'm not saying that, you know, people shouldn't talk about this sort of thing, but I'm just saying this happens all the time, and we go through this song and dance every single time. Nothing ever changes. And this is not going to change anything either. So hopefully people listening to this, you know, don't know anybody that was directly involved today. I certainly hope not, but it's just a very, very, very sad situation. And hopefully we can talk some wrestling here and take our minds off all the bullshit of the world, which is kind of the point, I would think, of doing shows like this. So, with that being said, I want to get into some business first. We got a lot to talk about. It feels like we have a lot to talk about every week. This is really no different. But up front, I want to thank everybody who's been using our link to sign up on Audible, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. Don't forget, JTG's second book is now available, narrated by JTG himself. He made some news this past week or so on JR's podcast. Of course, he's done two interviews with this podcast, which you can find on our YouTube channel. But he's got two books out, both of which are, I believe, both of which are narrated by him and are available on Audible. So if you want to use our link, you sign up for the free trial. You get 30 days to try out the service. If you stick with it, great. If you don't, you get to keep one free audio book. When you sign up, you can cash in one. So it could be JTG's book, it could be Daniel Bryan's book, it could be Brock Lesnar's book. He's made quite a bit of news recently. Any book you want, audibletrial.com/Solomonster. We still have that deal going on. Also, we have a couple of new shirts. One new shirt is up right now. We have a Sound of Girl shirt up in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. There is a quote-unquote for life shirt. There were a lot of people in the Facebook group talking about how they would love to have a shirt that, you know, had the For Life symbol on it, you know, for Sound Off fans. So I had a little something put together, and it should be up on the store probably by the time a lot of you listen to this. It's probably already up in the store, but if not, it'll be up any day now. So that's up on prowrestlingtees.com/Solomonster Sounds Off. And speaking of t-shirts, since this was such a big hit when I tried this about 6 or 7 weeks ago, we're going to do it again. It is PayPal Rumble time. If you make a donation to the podcast of $10 or more between now and next Sunday, let's say by 10 a.m. Eastern time, so next Sunday at 10 a.m. is the cutoff, if you want a shout-out on this podcast and you want to be part of the contest, what'll happen is you will be entered into a random drawing for a sound-off shirt of your choosing. So you tell me which one you want, you tell me the size, you tell me where to send it to. I will personally pay to have it shipped out to you. And because we had such a big response and I picked two winners last time, we'll do the same thing again this time. We're going to pick two winners. So again, make a donation this week, $10 or more. You will automatically be entered. And I will also include, because I really appreciate the people that have been buying t-shirts from the store. Anyone who has bought a shirt from our store this month, for the month of June, so far, and even including this week upcoming, you will automatically be entered into the contest. So you don't have to make a donation. You certainly can. I'm not stopping you from doing so. But you will automatically be part of the contest as well. Just a little show of appreciation. So should be fun. We had a big response last time, and I think I kind of read the names Royal Rumble style. So anyway, that is going to take place over the course of the week. If you like what you hear each week, you can make a donation on thesolomonster.com. $10 or more will get you a wrestling nickname. Want to say thank you to John Loose Cannon Lopez, Deadpool James Herrera, Out of Control Cody Thomas, Damn Straight Michael Dorsey, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, The Chosen Son Andre Smith, Slice and Dice Philip Kruger, Julian Badstreet Blanc, Chuck Lunatic Lentz, High Roller Jeff Chance, The Lone Star Loudmouth Tom Mahaffey, Misfit Miguel Mendoza, Ian, I'm Not a Man, I'm a Machine Gun, and for all things Ian Hates, you can check out his family of podcasts. He's got Ian Hates Movies, where him and his co-host Kelly discuss, of course, what else? Movies. Ian Hates Music is another one. Him and his co-host Craig, they do band interviews and talk about news, reviews, everything in between. If you're a fan of post-hardcore, metalcore, I don't even know what metalcore is, but apparently it's a genre. You've got metal, screamo. I didn't even know there was such a thing as screamo. I just thought it was the Spanish word for yelling at someone, but you see, you learn something new every day. So I got to get on that Rosetta Stone stuff now. Check him out, ianhates.com, also at ianhatespodcast on Twitter, or you can find the shows on iTunes and Stitcher. Also, a good friend of the show, Marcus, over in Norway, he's been a fan of the podcast since probably going back to about episode 90 or so. And if you remember, he was the Norwegian wedding that I crashed with Noah back in New Orleans before WrestleMania 30. He was also kind very kind enough to be the videographer for the live Sound Off that we did this year in Dallas. Anyway, he wanted to give a Sound Off shout out here to his tough as nails bride, Trina, and the newest member of their family, Tobias, who was born just last week. So I want to say congrats to the both of you. And last but not least, shout out to Montese Antoine Moore on his John Cena song. It's called Triumphant. Just passed 600,000 views on Facebook. And you can download it right now with facebook.com/AntoineMooreLewis. All right, in what is quickly becoming our weekly MMA segment, it feels like it, right? Kimbo Slice. This is more sad news. He passed away earlier this week, 42 years old, died of heart failure. Apparently he was in need of a heart transplant when he died. Last time I saw him is probably the last time a lot of you saw him, when he fought Dada 5000 on, I guess it would have been Spike TV, it was the Bellator show. One of the most entertaining fights I think I've ever seen. It was also one of the worst, probably one of the worst fights of all time, but also very entertaining. But you look back on it now, and I mean, both guys were just completely blown up. They both looked like they were about to keel over and die. And you wonder, you know, how much of that maybe was, you know, heart issues. I mean, who knows? I would like to think that these guys are checked out by doctors before they fight. I think Dada actually ended up in the hospital and almost died. You could have had a situation here where within a few months, both of the fighters in that fight would have been dead. But thankfully, Dada, I guess he's, I don't know if he's still in the hospital or what's going on. I know he was in pretty rough shape, but he's okay. And Kimbo, not so much. He's a very charismatic guy. Kind of came out of nowhere many years ago. And I guess YouTube is where he made his fame as this tough guy, street fighter. And UFC brought him in. I think he was on Ultimate Fighter one of the seasons. And his fights tended to do very well. I think that fight with Dada, the Bellator fight, did very well in the ratings. So, you know, the guy was a draw. People were attracted to seeing him fight. He seemed like a nice guy. And 42 years old, whether you're a nice guy or not, is way too young. It's just a really terrible situation. And so, very sad to hear that. Now, in completely different MMA news that has absolutely nothing to do with that, on the opposite end, you have Paige VanZant, who, of course, competed on ABC's Dancing with the Stars, UFC fighter. WWE is apparently interested in bringing in Paige VanZant for some sort of appearance at SummerSlam. I don't know if it's for a segment similar to what Ronda Rousey did at WrestleMania last year. Maybe it's a match. Maybe it's a mixed tag. Nobody seems to know. Maybe WWE doesn't know. But apparently they want her. Is it going to happen? Is it part of this deal they made with UFC? I don't think it's part of any deal they made. I think they have an interest, and maybe they're hoping that, hey, you know, we're allowing Brock to fight, and so you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. I don't know if it's an even exchange, but she is coming off Dancing with the Stars. It is still a very popular show. She went all the way to the finals before she lost, so she did pretty well on there. She's a beautiful girl. If you've never seen pictures of her, she's gorgeous. So I guess we'll see, you know, what happens there. She's got an MMA record of 6-2, so, you know, she can throw down. Do they do something with her and Stephanie? I still think Ronda Rousey is, I mean, clearly Ronda Rousey is a much bigger name. I still think if you're going to have some kind of a payoff with Stephanie, it should be with Ronda, maybe at next year's WrestleMania. Maybe they don't think they can get her. You know, maybe they want to do something with Stephanie at SummerSlam. I'm just trying to envision what they would do with her if it didn't involve Stephanie. I guess they could do a match, you know, maybe her and Charlotte. I would hate to louse up any plans they may have to do Charlotte and Sasha. Just because I think Sasha winning the championship in Brooklyn a year after she lost the NXT title to Bayley, it's a nice story. And, you know, Sasha's been off TV now for months, at least on Raw and SmackDown. And at some point, they're going to have to bring her back. I don't want them to kind of push those plans off to the side just because, hey, we want to get an MMA fighter and we want to get a little bit of a buzz going here. You can get whatever buzz going you want. You know, drink all the beers you want. You'll have plenty of buzz. I don't think you should mess with any plans that you may already have in place. So if it is something involving Charlotte, maybe they'll bring Paige VanZant in as some kind of an enforcer. That could work. You know, they did something very similar with Buster Douglas many years ago with Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. It was supposed to be Mike Tyson. Tyson got knocked out, so they got Buster Douglas instead to do it. It was on one of those Saturday Night Main Event specials on NBC. he came in, he was the either the referee or the enforcer, and he punched Randy Savage when the match was over. You could do something like that. Maybe you bring her in, you have Charlotte against Sasha, you have Paige VanZant there at ringside as the enforcer, and at the end of the match, she can take down Charlotte, or better yet, if Charlotte has Dana Brooke in her corner, Paige VanZant, she could be in Sasha's corner, or if she just happens to be out there, Dana Brooke goes to interfere, Paige VanZant can take down Dana Brooke, and Dana Brooke can take a bump for her. I actually like that idea a lot. I like that idea a lot. So if they are thinking about bringing her in, even more so than doing something with Stephanie, fuck that. I think this is the way to go. And by no means am I trying to put Paige VanZant on the same level as Mike Tyson by using this comparison, so don't beat me up. But I almost look at it, it can be like a Tyson-Austin kind of thing where they use the fighter, they use the celebrity in this case, to help get the babyface over. And when Sasha gets the big title win, you know, Paige VanZant gets in the ring and raises her arm, and you get that great visual of Sasha Banks with the championship and VanZant, you know, putting her arm up in the air. I really like that idea a lot. So hopefully that's what they're thinking. Hopefully they're thinking the same thing. Now, Brock Lesnar, very shortly after I did last week's podcast, the next day, in fact, we found out who he is fighting at UFC 200 on July 9. He is going to be fighting Mark Hunt. Now, Brock tells this story about how this whole thing came together. I don't know if this is true. I don't know if this is just a tall tale, funny joke he was saying, but he claimed in one of the interviews that he did, how this all came about was very simple. He went to Vince McMahon, and he challenged Vince McMahon to an arm wrestling match. And Vince said, okay, sure, with the idea being that if Brock beat Vince, Vince would let Brock go fight. So they had an arm wrestling match, and I guess Brock won because Brock's fighting, and that's the story he tells. Is that what happened? Probably not. I would think there's a lot more to it than that, but it's a cute story. So yeah, he's going to be in there with Mark Hunt. I said last week, I mentioned Mark Hunt's name. I don't claim to know as much about these fighters as I do about a lot of the wrestlers, even though I like UFC and I watch a lot of their big shows, at least. And my brother is a huge fan, so whenever, you know, he's around, if he's getting a UFC show, we'll usually watch them together. Obviously, we're going to be watching UFC 200. I would not miss this. So I don't know a whole hell of a lot about Mark Hunt, but I've seen him. I've watched some fight highlights. He is a bad motherfucker. That is what I know about Mark Hunt. I know he has broken, literally, physically broken people in his fights. And, you know, he is older than Brock. Not by that much. I think he's about 3 years older. Brock, so I guess Brock would be 39. Hunt would be about 42. So it's not like there's a 10-year age difference or anything like that. All it takes is one punch. You know, it's certainly a risk. Brock can go in there, he can get knocked out, and in fact, it would not shock me at all if Brock Lesnar got knocked out in the first 30, not even the first 30 seconds. I'll say Brock Lesnar, pretty good chance he's going to get knocked out in the first minute of the fight. I mean, it's impossible to say because the guy hasn't fought in what, 5 years? I mean, anybody who says they know exactly what's going to happen in this fight, they don't. I mean, it's impossible to predict, especially when you throw in the whole idea that, okay, even if you are a fight analyst and you remember watching Brock Lesnar fight back in 2010 and 2011, if Brock and Heyman and them are to be believed, that was not the same Brock Lesnar that you're going to see here because that Brock was not healthy. And now Brock is 100% healthy. He's going to be a completely different fighter. So, you know, he's a wild card here. But I watched those clips of Mark Hunt and it scared me. So, and Brock Lesnar is not somebody that I think you need to be scared for, but I don't know. He's got bigger balls than I do, I'll tell you that much. He doesn't seem to care who he fights. He'll just go in there and he'll go toe-to-toe with them and whatever happens, happens. And for WWE's sake, it would be nice if Brock went in there and got a nice win. I'm sure that's what Vince McMahon... And Vince McMahon, I'm sure Vince McMahon has no fucking idea who Mark Hunt is. You know, he probably didn't even know who Brock was fighting when he agreed to the deal. Or maybe he didn't. Had he known, would he have made the same choice and let him fight? I don't know. Not if somebody showed him the YouTube video I saw. But it'll be fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to watch that. I was surprised they didn't mention the Lesnar fight at all on Raw last Monday, especially with all the mainstream press that the thing got. I mean, I assume they're mentality is, okay, we'll wait until we're about a week out from the fight. So that last Raw before UFC 200, I would be stunned at that point if they made no mention of it at all on Raw. I mean, I know it's not their pay-per-view, but they are kind of working together on this. Brock is their guy. He is under contract to them. And you know for a fact that if Brock wins, they're not going to shut up about it. I mean, on Raw, on SmackDown, on WWE.com, on Twitter, they're going to be talking about this thing for weeks and weeks and weeks about how Brock Lesnar went to UFC 200 and got a big win. So I was surprised that they didn't mention this on Raw Monday night. Only other thing I wanted to mention here on the MMA front, and this kind of ties in with wrestling. According to Jeremy Botter, CM Punk is rumored to finally be making his UFC debut at UFC 202 on August 20th. His opponent, Mickey Gall. By the way, August 20th, I mean, that happens to fall on the same night as the NXT TakeOver Brooklyn show, which, by the way, I will be at. Very happy. I was at last year's show. It was freaking awesome. And I was not going to miss this one. So I've got my tickets already for the Brooklyn show. I'll be at SummerSlam and Raw, too. So three nights in a row in that building. And also, I'll have something to announce on, as it relates to SummerSlam. I'll have something to announce on that in the next couple of weeks. So you'll want to stay tuned for that. Mickey Gall, 2-0 MMA record, pro MMA record, happens to be a full 13 years younger than CM Punk. And without all of the injuries from wrestling that Punk has had. So I would think, probably much like Brock in the Mark Hunt fight, Punk's going into this much more so than Brock as the underdog. But it's going to be fun. And I'm going to try to find a way to watch that show. I'm kind of pissed that it kind of falls in the same night. Hopefully his fight goes on after the NXT show ends and we can find a place in the area to go watch it. So That's all the MMA news. Oh, actually, no, there's one more thing here. Ariel Helwani, since I mentioned this last week, Ariel Helwani was banned, if you remember. Dana White pulled him backstage during the UFC 199 show. Ariel had broken the news before UFC had a chance to break the news that Brock was coming back and that Conor McGregor was going to be fighting Nate Diaz at UFC 202. They were not happy with Helwani at all, and Dana White said, "You're gone. Go cover Bellator. You're out of here. You're finished. See ya." And he kicked him out before the main event. He kicked him out of the building. And Dana White talked to TMZ the next day and said, "No, he's more than happy to come to the next show so long as he buys a ticket. But as long as I'm here, he's banned." And it wasn't more than a few hours later than UFC changed their mind and they reinstated Helwani. I guess they gave him his credential back. They said he's now unbanned. So I don't know what happened there. Probably just the pressure, I guess, built up. And they have now reversed their position, which was the right thing to do. He never should have been banned in the first place. And I'm saying that understanding that it's their company and it's not unlawful for them to take a credential away from somebody. They can do whatever the hell they want. But it was a bullshit move on their part. And I was very happy to hear that they have reversed course because that was... It was just a shitty thing for them to do, and it made them look so bad. It was just unwanted press. You know, they came off this great pay-per-view, and all anybody was talking about was, you know, Ariel Helwani. You know, this reporter who now all of a sudden became a much bigger star than he was before. He's all over ESPN talking about what happened and doing interview after interview. And I think UFC probably saw that and said, all right, this has gotten way out of hand, and we'll let him back in, so... That's all the MMA news I got. Now, there was another story that broke this week as it relates to Hulk Hogan and his battle with Gawker. Gawker filed for bankruptcy this week. It will be going up for sale by way of auction. Apparently, Ziff Davis supposedly has interest in buying them. Ziff Davis is a pretty big company. They already own a lot of media properties, including IGN. They are a big player, and they want a piece of Gawker, apparently. So Gawker itself may yet live on after all of this in some form. But they're being forced into bankruptcy in light of the $140 million judgment that Hulk Hogan won against them, which, by the way, is money that Hogan is probably never, ever going to see, especially now. So it's a nice little moral victory for him, but it's not like he's going to be lounging on a... Well, actually, he probably will be lounging on a beach somewhere, rubbing suntan lotion on his daughter. Good for him. But, you know, what he wanted was to put Gawker out of business, so he got what he wanted. At the end of the day, Hogan wanted to embarrass and get his revenge on Gawker, And, you know, I know he was being backed by this billionaire, and so that guy got what he wanted as well. But Hogan wanted to also. He wanted to see this through until the end. He wanted to kind of get one back on Gawker, and he did. So Hogan got exactly what he wanted. And I say good for him, because Gawker got exactly what it deserved. I have no sympathy for them. Fuck them. This was the lead story on the cover of yesterday's New York Post. Said, let's get ready to crumble, was the headline. Had a photo of Hogan wrestling Ric Flair on their tour of Australia that they did before Hogan went to TNA. One of the saddest things I've ever seen. If you remember the photos from that tour and the matches they had on that tour, Hogan looking old as ever, Flair looking old as ever, bleeding all over the place. Just a complete embarrassment, I think, to both of those guys. I just remember looking at those photos and just cringing at what I was seeing. So they decided, of course, to use one of those photos on the cover of the newspaper. So, and that was the same tour, by the way, that Umaga worked right before he passed away. So I was not thrilled about having to look at Ric Flair's saggy, bloody tits on the cover while I ate breakfast, but somehow I managed to keep the food down. Nothing new on the brand split front. We still don't know when the draft is. We don't know who the GMs are, if they're going to split the titles. We don't really know anything new from what we talked about last week, but a lot of you were not very keen on the idea that I pitched of having a Raw title and a SmackDown title and calling it that. First of all, let me just make one thing clear. I made it clear last week. I don't want separate titles at all. I would rather there be one singular WWE champion. I don't want to split these belts up again. But if they are going to go ahead and do that, I don't like the idea of calling one the WWE title and calling the other one the world title. I just think that's stupid. They're both world titles. So I said, have a Raw belt made and have a SmackDown belt made. And most of you didn't seem to like that idea very much. Jermaine Torres, want to give him a shout out here on Twitter. He sent me a tweet. He suggested that instead of changing the belts, or like radically changing the belts, why not keep the WWE title design that they currently have? Keep that for both brands. And instead, what you do is you have one, like the one on Raw, for example, that has the red line or the red check mark under the WWE logo. You keep that. And for SmackDown, you have the belt with a blue check mark under the WWE logo. And I thought about that, about how that would look in my head. And I actually think that would be pretty cool. I like that idea. I mean, I know you know there's kind of a feeling of sameness there. I think you know, the women's title looks the same also, only it's got a white strap. But you know, they want all of the world titles to have that giant logo, right? I get that. I understand that. Joe Blow watching the champion on SportsCenter or watching them on the Today Show sees the logo and immediately he knows, hey, that's a WWE belt. But I think, you know, distinguishing them with a red mark and a blue mark, I think would be fine. Of course, you could still, you do still have the issue of what do you call them? If you're not going to call them the WWE title and the world title, then what do you call them? And I know, look, in the grand scheme of things, it's not a big deal. I'm making a bigger deal of it than I probably should. I did suggest, if you remember, creating a secondary title for the NXT brand after Dusty Rhodes passed away. I suggested that they have a secondary belt. They call it the Dream title. They ended up going with the Dusty Rhodes Tag Team Classic instead, which is cool. I would think they're going to do another one this year. But by then, you know, if you think about it, the timeline here, in September, they're going to be climaxing this Cruiserweight Classic. So to go from the Cruiserweight Classic to the Dusty Classic so soon after, I don't know, maybe they don't want to do that. I would think at some point they are going to have another tag team tournament, though. I mean, they've certainly got the teams for it if they want to do it. You've got, you know, American Alpha is probably headed to the main roster, but if they're still around, you've got them. You've got the new guys who debuted to take over. They're calling themselves the Authors of Pain. You've got the Revival. You've got the Hype Bros. Gargano and Ciampa. TM61, who just debuted a few weeks ago. I mean, I think they could probably use one or two more teams, but they've got teams. But my point is this. I like the idea of paying homage to legends of the past with these things. You know, the Dusty Classic, the Andre Battle Royal. Maybe there's a way for them to incorporate that here. I don't quite know offhand which, you know, what way that is. I'm not advocating that you have the dream title on SmackDown, but maybe there's a way that they can do that here. WWE posted a video on its YouTube channel yesterday that has a lot of people very upset. To the tune of over, I think by now it's probably 40,000 dislikes on the video itself. It was a ranking of the top 10 catchphrases in WWE over the last decade. This is their list in rank order, okay, from 10 to 1. This is their list. Zack Ryder, woo woo woo, you know it, that's number 10. Number 9, Jack Swagger, We the People, or Weed the People, if you remember that. Number 8, Bo Dallas, All You Have to Do is Believe. Number 7, Wade Barrett, I'm Afraid I've Got Some Bad News. Number 6, The New Day, Bootios, They Make Sure You Ain't Booty. Can't believe I just said that. Enzo Amore and Colin Cassidy, SAWFT Soft. It's my Russo there. Bray Wyatt, Follow the Buzzards. The Miz, Because I'm The Miz and I'm Awesome. Number 2, Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, Best for Business. And number 1, Roman Reigns, I'm Not a Good Guy, I'm Not a Bad Guy, I'm The Guy. So that's the list. According to WWE, Roman Reigns has the best catchphrase in the company over the last 10 years. Now, my first thought in seeing this list of so-called greatest catchphrases is apparently how shitty the last decade has been. Because I'm not really a big fan of any of these. But let me just say this. This list, okay, that everybody's been debating over the last 24 hours, I think until what happened this morning, and I think we could all agree that this is all bullshit compared to that, in the grand scheme of things, of course. But in terms even of just pro wrestling and stupid pro wrestling bullshit to argue over, this list means nothing. This is a meaningless list, so there is no need for anybody to get all worked up about it. Right? They wanted to get your attention. And guess what? It worked. You gave it to them. It's no different than those top 50 lists that WWE.com cranks out every now and then. And every single time it turns into a giant controversy. As though these lists mean anything. They don't. It's some web editor on WWE.com. Or maybe it's Joey Styles himself, whoever it is. Just trying to get a rise out of people. They're trying to spark a discussion. Which then leads to more clicks. And page views, which is exactly what they're looking for. That's all this is. You think they care that this video has 11,000 likes and 40,000 dislikes? It could have a million dislikes. All that means is over a million people clicked on the link to watch it. You know, I mean, Roman Reigns is their guy. It's all part of the marketing. They're not gonna rank Bray Wyatt over Roman Reigns. Bray Wyatt can barely stay healthy enough to stay on TV anyway longer than 2 weeks at a time. He's not their guy. Reigns is their guy. Now, does he have the catchphrase of the decade? Of course not. Of course not. It's ridiculous. And it's not even like the line itself is a bad line, right? It's not a bad line. It's not a good line. No, I'm just kidding. I couldn't help myself. No, but it's not, though. It's not a terrible line when you hear it for the first time. It's cringeworthy to hear him say it now. But no, it's not the catchphrase of the decade. Suplex City Bitch would be my pick. Even if you take off the bitch, Suplex City would be my pick. And it wasn't even on the list. And nor was it a line that some writer came up with for him. Brock, I'm sure, just threw it out there randomly during a match. And the mics just so happened to pick it up. I don't even know that I've heard Brock say it since. Heyman is the one who always mentions it. But, you know, Heyman is Brock's mouthpiece. He does the talking on Brock's behalf, so it's become his catchphrase. You know, it's like they used to call Karl Rove Bush's brain because of how important he was in getting George W. Bush elected. Heyman's kind of like that with Brock, only he's Brock's mouth. And if you've ever heard Brock talk on WWE television, you know why, okay? It's amazing. If you listen to a Brock Lesnar, like, UFC promo, or if they're doing a press conference and Brock is there and he's being interviewed, the guy is awesome. In WWE, it's like a completely different person. He's awful. Thank God he has Heyman doing the talking for him. And that catchphrase has made them a lot of money in t-shirt sales. Every city now has its own Suplex City shirt. I don't think they've ever... I don't know that... I shouldn't say that. Maybe they have, but I can't think offhand of anybody, you know, in recent years that came out with a t-shirt, and in every single city, they adapted to put that city's name on it for that person. So that's pretty cool. The best catchphrases, I think, are the ones that make you money. Austin 316 is probably the best example of that. I still see people wearing those shirts today, and it's 20 years later. Is it 20 years? I think it's 20. Oh, yeah, it is 20 years. 20 years this month. Wow. It's 20 years ago this month that Austin 316... Jesus Christ, that means it's 20 years ago since I started high school. My God, where's my life gone? Anyway, having a midlife crisis here on the air, and I'm not even at my midlife point yet. If they ever put Roman's line on a shirt, who knows? Maybe they'll sell a bunch of them. Maybe it'll be the number one seller. Okay, they haven't done that yet. We'll see. I don't think they've made one yet. But give it time. I'm sure they will. You know, best for business at number two, I can see, you know, if only because they beat that thing to death for 3 years. Every single week for 3 years, we heard best for business, best for business, best for business. Everything on Raw and SmackDown for those 3 years revolved around best for business and the authority. So I get that. But my end point here is let's not get angry about it, okay? It was meant to get people talking. It worked. They got exactly what they wanted. So good for them. I took another one of those WWE fan council surveys this week. They emailed it out to select people. This one focused on potential WWE DVD releases for 2017. I don't know that all of these are being made, but these are the ones that are under consideration. So what I'm going to do here, I'm going to read the description that they have listed for each DVD. This is directly from the survey. I'm going to read this to you now, and then you can decide which DVDs you may or may not be interested in buying. So the first one they have here, let me just bring the list up here. The first one they have on this list is, who else? Stephanie McMahon. This is what the description says. From growing up a McMahon to ultimately becoming chief brand officer in WWE, Stephanie McMahon's story is one of female empowerment in a predominantly male-oriented business. Stephanie worked through different departments at WWE, including the creative team, and became one of the most captivating on-screen characters in WWE history. Behind the scenes, Stephanie co-founded Connor's Cure and is incredibly involved in such organizations as Be a Star when she's not busy slapping the shit out of everyone. Now, directly beneath that one, they have a Hardy Boys DVD listed. It's Hardy Boys Match Compilation. This is what it says. It says, the Hardy Boys, Matt and Jeff, were born to wrestle, starting in their early days jumping on a trampoline to rising through the ranks of WWE and eventually becoming a psychotic piano-playing Disney villain with some sort of deformed British accent and an equally psychotic umbrella salesman. Matt and Jeff are the perfect combination of high-flying and ground attack that dazzled the WWE universe. Their matches were legendary, and now you get a chance to own them. So they are considering making a Hardy Boys DVD. We also have one for Kevin Owens called The Kevin Owens Experience, where you get a chance to follow Kevin around in his daily routine to find out what makes the prize fighter tick. And listen to him as he recalls honing his craft on the independence before coming to WWE. 1997, a look back at the year 97. It was the rise of Stone Cold Steve Austin, the birth of DX, the summer of the Hart Foundation, and the debut of Kane. And, of course, the infamous Montreal Screwjob that I'm sure you have not heard nearly enough about. Shane McMahon biography is listed here. Shane McMahon, the fourth generation of the legendary McMahon family, sits down for the first time ever to tell his story. So that almost sounds like it's just the podcast, maybe that he... I keep calling it a podcast, not even a podcast. The interview that he did with Mick Foley, and maybe around that they would add matches and stuff. Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns has burst on the scene to become one of the biggest superstars to date. but it's no surprise as his historical lineage has set him up for greatness. And that pissed a lot of people off when I mentioned that. Cruiserweight Championship, 20 years later, a match compilation looking back at the legacy of the Cruiserweight Championship from WCW, which created the likes of Chris Jericho, Eddie Guerrero, Rey Mysterio, and Dean Malenko. The rise of NXT. In recent years, NXT has emerged as an incredible box office draw for WWE with sold-out live events and network specials, blah, blah, blah. Watch WWE's, quote, developmental system churn out future Hall of Famer superstars like John Cena, Randy Orton, Brock Lesnar, Batista, Kevin Owens, Charlotte, and more. So that leads me to believe that they're going to have OVW matches and OVW footage on there. They own the OVW library, and I've been wondering why none of that stuff has popped up on the network. So this is like the first hint that we might be getting, you know, some matches and whatnot from OVW. They have another one here, two more, called Masters of the Mic, which is a countdown of the top 25 talkers in WWE history, and they mention Stone Cold, Dusty Rhodes, Chris Jericho, The Rock, Mick Foley, The McMahons, Paul Heyman, no CM Punk, although that's no surprise, but he certainly is one of the better talkers they've ever had. And Goldberg, and this was interesting because we just got a Goldberg DVD within the last few years, and so apparently they're going to capitalize off of his popularity. He's in their new video game, so they're thinking about doing another Goldberg DVD, this time I think where he actually sits down for a fresh interview. I don't think they did an actual new interview with him for the last DVD. If somebody bought it and can tell me and let me know, but I don't think they did. So here it sounds like they're going to get him in studio and talk to him, and then they'll have some of his matches. So that's the list. Those are the DVDs that they are considering at this point for next year. I guess my question to you, which ones, you know, would you buy? That's a question to think about. As far as which ones I would buy, I wouldn't buy any of them because I don't buy DVDs anymore. But if I did still buy wrestling DVDs, I would spring for two of them. I would spring for the 1997 one, and I would spring for the Rise of NXT, mainly for the OVW footage that it sounds like it might have on there. So those would be my two, and the question is, what would be yours?
I'm actually not wearing pants, and that's how I watch NXT every single week.
NXT TakeOver, The End of the Beginning, was this past Wednesday on the WWE Network. I threw up a TakeOver poll on Twitter when the show was over. What was the best match on the show? Over 1,600 of you voted. 45% to the tune of American Alpha against The Revival for the tag team titles. 34% for Austin Aries against Shinsuke Nakamura. 16% for Samoa Joe against Finn Balor. And 5% for Asuka against Nia Jax. You know, it's hard to rank these shows because they all sort of blend together. And when I say that, I mean that in the best way possible. There has yet to be a single bad TakeOver show. They all range from very good to great. It's like if you pick your favorite TV show of all time, okay? Mine, for example, is either Breaking Bad or The Shield. It's hard to choose. They're both awesome. But I'll go with The Shield in this case, right? And by the way, Sean Ryan just did an interview. I saw somebody sent me the link. He was the creator of The Shield. He did an interview teasing that we could possibly see the show come back. I mean, he was kind of like, he didn't explicitly come right out and say, hey, I want to bring the show back. But they were, you know, talking to him and he was making comments that would lead one to believe that there's a chance the show could come back. Yeah, it's like, don't play with my emotions like that, dude. Seriously, I hate when people do that. The guy who played Julian on the show, I'll tell you something about that. If the show comes back, he won't be on there because he just got sentenced this week to 40 years to life in prison for murdering his wife. A little FYI there. But anyway, The Shield, right? I never saw a bad episode of that show. I mean, the only episode I remember that I liked maybe the least, which was still a good episode, it was like a flashback episode they did in season two to explain how the strike team came to be. Yeah, but they didn't progress any storylines that week, which I think is what kind of bothered me when I saw, like, oh man, like they're going to go back in time and all that kind of stuff, which is funny now because when you think of it in terms of being a wrestling fan, I mean, I don't speak for everybody. I'll speak for myself here, but especially when it comes to WWE, I actually enjoy going back in time more so than watching a lot of the new stuff. So anyway, but that bothered me. And I know why they did it, because they wanted to establish like how we got here. But even that episode, it was pretty damn good. So even though I tend to groan when TV shows do that, you know, it's important to establish the backstory. So I get it. Breaking Bad did something similar, I think. I remember an episode with Walt and Jesse in the meth lab, and I think they were having like flashbacks or dream sequences or something like that. The Sopranos had an infamous episode in one of the later seasons. I think it might have been the test pattern episode, where the whole thing is basically a dream that Tony has. David Chase would get a little too, a little too cute for his own good sometimes. And I remember people just completely panning that episode. I was a big fan of The Sopranos too, but when you think of like a Breaking Bad, I never saw a bad episode of that show. Even the episodes that would sometimes make me groan because maybe I wish they were, you know, moving things forward, and instead they were trying to kind of slow things down and take their time and explain things, I never saw a bad episode of that show. These takeover shows are the same way. Some are better than others, but you can always rely on the fact that you're going to get a great show, and this one was no different. It wasn't the best takeover. I had a couple of people, oh, was this the best one? No, I don't think it was. My top three would probably, and this is in no particular order, but my top three would probably be Brooklyn, Respect, right? I think Respect was the one with the Iron Woman match and the Dusty Classic matches. And Our Evolution, which is the one where Kevin Owens debuted and then Sami Zayn won the NXT title at the end of the show and then Owens turned on Zayn. That would be my top three. But this was a great show. Ty Dillinger took on the debuting Andrade Cien Almas, who is the former La Sombra, who once beat Shinsuke Nakamura to win the IWGP Intercontinental title. Even though this was Almas' debut, Ty Dillinger, clearly, star of this match. The Full Sail crowd made this guy a star here in this match. They treated him like royalty. And because of that, I think he overshadowed Almas in his debut here. Almas looked good. You know, he used the running double knees in the corner to beat Dillinger, which was the scariest thing I've seen probably in the last 2 weeks since I watched that Hardy Boy segment on Impact. I mean, you see somebody coming at your face with his knees at that kind of velocity, I'd probably shit a brick if that were me. WWE or NXT Tag Team Champion, maybe soon to be WWE Tag Team Champions, American Alpha against the former champs, The Revival. This fucking match. Holy crap. This was a great match. And I thought a pretty surprising outcome. At least it was shocking to me. I mean, this is the very first title defense on TV for American Alpha, and they lose the titles. I did not see that coming. So The Revival become the first ever two-time NXT Tag Team Champions. I think they're probably the first ever two-time champs of any kind in NXT. This obviously opens them up to be drafted, American Alpha that is, to Raw or SmackDown next month. I would think that probably is why they lost the titles so quickly, is that there's at least a pretty good chance, maybe Triple H has a sense that, hey, you know, the old man's going to want to bring you up, you know, and go to Raw, go to SmackDown. So there's a pretty good chance I would think of that happening. And as much as I would hate to lose them from NXT, those two guys, they absolutely belong on the main roster, you know, hanging with the top teams. And they'll get over there just like they got over here, so long as they're given that chance. Now, so far, they've done pretty well with Enzo and Kaz. You know, for all the times we kind of joke about all the guys that have gone up to the main roster and they're just kind of there. You look at what they've done with Tyler Breeze, who now at least they've given him something to do. Apollo Crews, I think, is kind of cold right now. Although I think in the end he'll be okay. But Kaz and Enzo have come up, and they've gotten over like gangbusters, and they're getting TV time, and they're already one of the top acts on TV. So I don't doubt that Jordan and Gable can be that same kind of team. They'll come up. They'll do very well for themselves. Vince McMahon probably will take one look at Jason Jordan, and he'll have dollar signs in his eyeballs, even though he should for Jordan and for Gable. But yeah, I mean, you know, I'm holding on to what they've done with Kaz and Enzo as hope that they'll do right by these two, because in my opinion, they're the best tag team in the entire company right now. That includes NXT and main roster. Jordan and Gable are the most fun. They are the best tag team to watch. I also realize here in watching this match, Scott Dawson does a better spine buster than Triple H does. Although Adam Rose did too. He had a wicked spine buster. Match ended with a shatter machine to Jason Jordan. That also surprised me that they would have Jordan and not Gable be the one to eat the pin. This was, in my opinion, the match of the night. This was the match of the night. On that, I think we are in agreement. Me and the people who took the poll, 45% of you said that this was the match of the show. When it was over, Jordan and Gable, they got attacked by two newcomers who I've never seen before. Apparently, their names are Sonny Dinsa and Zim Selmani. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. G-Z-I-M. I'm not pronouncing the G. Dinsa is a very accomplished amateur wrestler. Could have gone to the Olympics. Instead, he opted to pursue pro wrestling. Selmani used to be an MMA fighter. In fact, he's fought for Bellator before. Paul Ellery showed up during this attack. He walks out. He's standing at the head of the aisleway. Precious Paul Ellering, of course, WWE Hall of Famer, manager of the Road Warriors. He gets greeted by chants from the Full Sail crowd of, "Who are you?" Now, this upset a lot of people. It upset Kevin Owens. He tweeted about it. Honestly, when I first saw this, I thought they were chanting it at the two guys in the ring and not Paul Ellering. I went back and I watched it again. They probably were chanting it at Paul Ellering. I mean, there's a chance they were chanting it at the other two guys, but watching it again, they probably were chanting it at Ellering. But you got to remember something here, okay? Ellering has not managed anybody in WWE since 1998. That's almost 20 years ago. And it's different than like a Jimmy Hart or a Bobby Heenan. I mean, not Bobby like the way he looks now, although he certainly does look unique, but let's say Bobby was totally healthy and he just looked a little bit older, a little bit thinner, because he is in his 70s now, obviously. He's not going to look exactly the same. But those guys all have their own distinct look. Jimmy Hart, of course, he had the jet black hair, the glasses, the megaphone. They had their own distinct look, the hair, whatever it was. You could see them and instantly go, "Hey, that's Jimmy Hart. Hey, that's Bobby the Brain." Ellering, he's got a bald head and a goatee and he hasn't been seen in 20 years. I can excuse people if they look over and they see a bald guy with a goatee and they don't recognize him right away. I don't even think they had him up on the screen. I think he just walked out and people kind of turned their heads and they saw this guy and they couldn't really see who it was. I mean, I didn't see like in the background Ellering's face front and center on the Titantron or anything like that. I mean, I know Full Sail's not a big arena, but still, if the guy's not on the screen, I wouldn't expect that people are going to know offhand who he is. It's not like people were expecting Paul Ellering to show up. He kind of came out of nowhere. And no Wall Street Journal, right? No newspaper? He didn't have a newspaper rolled up in his hand? I mean, that was his staple. That's like Jimmy Hart showing up without the megaphone. No wonder they didn't recognize this guy. That or Rocco. Rocco the Puppet. He should have had either one of those things. I think if he would have had either one, I'm sure people would have known who he was. So, you can come up with different reasons that you don't like the Full Sail crowd, and they tend to be a little full of themselves, and all the different chants and stuff. There was nothing on this show that really offended me that they did. Frankly, I've seen them chant and do far worse. This, I'm just going to chalk up to, you know, maybe some newer fans. They don't know. Bald guy. Who is he? Not a big deal. Apparently, these guys, though, that he's now managing, are going to be called the Authors of Pain. We saw Rachel Ellering make her NXT debut several weeks ago, and I don't think she's signed to a contract, but I think she'll probably will be soon enough. I think it'd be kind of cool to see her managed by her dad when she comes in. I mean, I know we just saw that with Charlotte and Ric Flair. It'd be kind of the same thing. I still think it would be pretty cool to see. Austin Aries against Shinsuke Nakamura. Excellent match. No real surprise there. Aries had his ribs taped up, but never really factored into the match, so maybe it was a legit injury that they just didn't want to draw too much attention to. Nakamura won with the Kinshasa. Aries sold the fuck out of that knee. He also nearly killed himself on a dive through the ropes when Nakamura moved out of the way and he hit the guardrail. I don't want to give out any spoilers about Nakamura's next opponent because I did hear about it. I didn't mean to, but I did. It was actually Triple H who spoiled it for me. Thank you, Triple H. But we can save that for next week's podcast after it airs on TV. I'm pretty sure it's going to air this week as far as what he's doing next, the segment that they taped. I think it's going to be on this week's TV. But again, Triple H already spoiled it on his Twitter, so it's fair game to mention, but I'll hold off. All I'll say is that it's not the match I was expecting. That's all I'll say about that. We had Asuka defending the Women's Championship against Nia Jax. This was the best Nia Jax match that I've seen yet since she debuted. And a couple of people were upset when I tweeted that because they thought it was some kind of slight against her match with Bayley in London, which it wasn't. It wasn't meant to be a slight, okay? There's no need to be salty about it. That was a good match, but I thought she looked a lot better here. She looked a lot better here than I thought she would. Asuka knocked her out with a series of kicks to the head. So it was a case where Asuka would try stuff, and Nia was, of course, the big powerhouse, and she would swat her away and counter. She had some pretty impressive counters during the match. She dominated a good part of it, but in the end, she got knocked the fuck out, and Asuka wins. We had a segment backstage with William Regal where we saw Bobby Roode walk past him in the background. Bobby Roode did make his official in-ring debut at the NXT event at the Download Festival in the UK this weekend. He beat Angelo Dawkins. As well as AJ Styles has done going straight to the main roster, and he's the same age. I think both of them are 39. Even though he just debuted for NXT, I would still draft this guy to Raw or SmackDown and debut him on the main roster next month. You'd still have Aries, Joe, Nakamura on the NXT roster. Plus, they keep debuting new faces every month. It's not like they're not going to have anybody if Bobby Roode goes to Raw or if Bobby Roode goes to SmackDown. NXT doesn't need Bobby Roode, but the main roster could use another big heel, especially if they split the brands. So I still think that's the best place for him. Main event was Samoa Joe defending the NXT Championship against Finn Balor in a steel cage match. Really good match between these. Yet another really good match between these two. Pretty much every match they've had has been really good. 7 months. That's how long they've been able to carry on with this feud for. 7 months. And I can honestly say I've never been bored of it. I've enjoyed every match. The promos, more so Joe, because Joe's a much better promo, in my opinion, than Balor. Especially when he's all fired up and all amped up. But it is time to move on. I think 7 months is long enough. I like the idea that it has all built to the cage match. It's a very old school concept, the idea of using the cage match to blow off the big feud. So there's really no need for them to keep this going. Joe won with the muscle buster off the second rope for the win, for the clean pin. I thought we would see a coup de grace off the top of the cage, but you know what? A, you're just asking for a broken ankle if you do that, and B, you only do it if you're winning the match. If Finn's going to win the match with that move, then that's cool. But if he's not winning the match with it, then it makes no sense to do it. Samoa Joe, what can I say? I mean, he continues, I've said it before, I'll say it again, continues to be the best champion in the entire company. You know, he's got that old school, badass vibe to him. I think he's doing some of the best work of his career right now. And there's no need to rush him up to the main roster. He's got a good thing going, I think, with the NXT title. But I think, you know, in the not-too-distant future, he is going to and should be called up to the main roster. Because, you know, when I mention Bobby Roode's name and I say, well, you know, the main roster could use another, like, good big heel. And I don't see Bobby Roode as being the number one, you know, bad guy on SmackDown or anything like that. I think he could be a solid, you know, number two, number three, number four. Joe can be number one, whether as a babyface or a heel. So the idea that the main roster doesn't need him, I mean, the main roster doesn't need any one person, but it's bullshit. He can bring so much, especially if they do the brand split. You put him on SmackDown, and the guy could add so much to that show. So it would be a crime if at some point they don't call him up. Maybe he drops the title at SummerSlam to whoever he's going to face, and then it happens, you know, shortly thereafter. Maybe it happens the next day. Raw's going to be in Brooklyn in the same building. That's the night I have earmarked for Bayley. I got my fingers crossed. I think that would be the best time to debut her. But Joe has a good thing going right now. And like I said, I think he's doing some of the best work that he's ever done. Monday Night Raw was live from Oklahoma City this past Monday. As you can tell, we're doing things in reverse this week. Raw Instapoll, 1,700 votes, 17% thumbs up, 18% thumbs down, 65% of you picked the takeover as this Wednesday option, which I don't blame you one bit for doing. Teddy Long was back on TV, if only for one night. He was booked to pretty much look like a complete buffoon. He was botching his lines left and right. But then again, you know, maybe it was planned that way. He referred to SmackDown as the second longest running wrestling show. That's what kind of killed it for me. I'm thinking to myself, you know, when the show is over, I'm thinking to myself, well, was this planned? Is this, they wanted, you know, they're playing off the idea. Like Mike Adamley. Mike Adamley, everybody knew that Mike Adamley was Botchamania's best friend. The best friend that Matthew could ever ask for was Mike Adamley when he was working for WWE. After a while, they became self-aware. They made him the general manager, and they were scripting botches for him. It wasn't funny anymore. It wasn't organic. It was stupid, and it didn't last that much longer. But again, they became self-aware, and they started incorporating those botches into the show. So part of me wonders if that's what they did here with Teddy Long, but then he has that line about how SmackDown's the second longest running wrestling show, and it's like, oh, he called it a wrestling show. Right? He called it a wrestling show, not the second longest running episodic TV series, which is what Michael Cole corrected him on when the segment was over. He committed the cardinal sin and he called it a wrestling show, which is a big no-no. So maybe he was flubbing his lines on his own. Very possible. He's been known to do that a time or two. So he tried to make matches throughout the show and security finally took him away. Stephanie, she didn't slap him. She verbally slapped him down before the end of the show, which you knew she would. You knew it was building up to some kind of emasculation, and that's exactly what we got. She just berated him and insulted him, and he had the puppy dog eyes, and it was very sad, and he left the building. The point to all of this was she had no idea why Teddy was even there. He said he wanted to be the SmackDown general manager again. Stephanie told him to hit the road, and instead he wanted to talk to Shane. But Shane was away on vacation this week. He was not on the show. And so in Shane's absence, Stephanie basically slipped back into power-hungry Stephanie mode. So the seed has now been planted for a sibling rivalry, with one taking over Raw and the other taking over SmackDown. So anybody holding their breath at Teddy Long or Eric Bischoff or Big Johnny or any of those people are going to come back and be the GM, I wouldn't hold my breath for very long, because I'm pretty sure it's going to end up being Shane and Stephanie. And that's it. I would not be surprised, though, if they trotted out other GMs from the past in the upcoming weeks to kind of build up this draft next month. Eric Bischoff spent three years, as the Raw general manager, and WWE just released a DVD on his career last week. So it would make sense to have him on the show, and in doing so, they can sell some DVDs and have Stephanie slap him. They aired a pair of video packages for Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, neither of whom appeared live on the show. The Rollins one was basically a condensed version of the documentary that aired on the network, and it was great. And when it was over, I couldn't wait to see him win back the championship. So, good job, guys. Speaking of Roman Reigns, that leads me to John Cena and The Club. And by the way, if these guys are going to stick together as a faction for a while, I think it may be time to come up with a better name than The Club. See, I was okay with it because I thought it was just a short-term thing. Anderson and Gallows were turning on AJ. But, you know, now AJ's a heel, and they're together. So, 28 writers. I'm sure they could do better than The Club. But I mentioned Roman Reigns because John Cena's work on the mic here in this segment really drove home for me the biggest difference between Cena and Reigns right now. As similar as they are, their verbal skills are anything but. Now, John Cena's had 10 years to hone those verbal skills. He's been in the spotlight a lot longer and under the gun a lot longer than Roman Reigns. But John Cena was a great talker from day one. When he started battle rapping in 2003, he was great. So it's not like John Cena came in very timid and not very good on the microphone. He had to kind of learn his way. If anything, I much prefer the John Cena from 2003 and 2004 on the microphone than I do the John Cena of today, just in terms of the content that comes out of his mouth. But he was always a good talker. Roman Reigns, I mean, this really, for me anyway, drove home the point that this guy's got a long way to go. He's got some work to do before he catches up to John Cena and becomes the so-called face of the company, because the face of the company is not Roman Reigns. The face of the company is still John Cena. So Cena called out AJ, and Styles said Cena insults him because he knows that in the ring, I can run circles around you, or I could wrestle circles around you, whatever it was. And Cena told him, well, you know, your jokes are as outdated as my jorts. He said AJ worked 2 decades to get to the Royal Rumble, and he failed. He wrestled Roman Reigns twice for the championship, and he failed. Then he made the very valid point that if you failed twice against Roman Reigns, what makes you think you can beat me? And part of me wonders if that's a very subtle dig that's building to an eventual, maybe even a WrestleMania match between Cena and Reigns. I don't know, maybe. They could, you know, would they be planting seeds this early? You know, maybe 30 years ago they would, or 20 years ago. I don't know that they're really thinking that far in advance now, but it almost sounded like an insult in a way if you think about it. So I guess we'll see if that goes anywhere, but Styles told Cena, everybody knows that once you've wrestled John Cena, it's time to break out the shovels because guys like you bury guys like me. Uh-oh. They're self-aware. So what they're doing here, they're playing into the narrative, you know, online, that when a new guy wrestles John Cena, they get buried. Now, of course, if we're looking at this in character, from a storyline perspective, what the hell does that even mean, right? You can explain it. I tried to find a way to explain it. You can explain it by saying, well, AJ is just pointing out that once you lose to John Cena, you go to the back of the line. Or he makes sure that you go to the back of the line and you're stuck there. But that's not what they said here. So I can just imagine, like, my friend's wife. I don't know if she was watching this, but she watches, you know, maybe not every week, but most weeks she'll tune in, not for the full 3 hours. She's not a crazy person like I am and many of us are, but she'll tune into the show. She has her favorites and, you know, she's a John Cena fan. I could just imagine her watching this and going, why would AJ admit that Cena is better than him? Because think about it, like if you're just an average fan, let's say I'm wrestling Don Tony for the championship, right? And I cut a promo and I say, guys like you bury guys like me. Well, that would be a pretty fucking stupid thing for me to say, wouldn't it? I don't sound very confident about this. So it was weird. I didn't hate it. It was just weird to hear him use that word on TV. They were trying to make it feel real. There are a lot of people who, when they first heard that AJ Styles was being matched up with John Cena at the next pay-per-view, they emailed me, for example, and they said, why are they burying AJ Styles? And on the last week's show, and the clip is online, I defended it, and I said, look, what else would you like for AJ to be doing right now? He just got out of a feud with the champion. Now, yes, he didn't win the title, but he feuded for 2 months with the champion, and now he's moving on to the face of the company. So now, you know, he's going to be programmed with one of the biggest names in the world. That's not a bad place to be so long as they keep it competitive. Now, even Kevin Owens got a win over John Cena. I would expect that AJ Styles is going to win at Money in the Bank. Especially if this is going to stretch out for 2 or 3 pay-per-views and not just one, because I'm almost positive they'll wrestle again in July and maybe even blow it off at SummerSlam. And yes, John Cena probably will end up winning the feud, but you got to give AJ a win, and Money in the Bank, I think, would be the place to do it. He has to win at some point. At least one. So they're taking real life and they're weaving it into the storyline. So I can't hate on that. It was weird, but I can't hate on that. Now, Cena did name drop the Bullet Club at one point during this. Some people think he didn't say Bullet Club. He said Pullet Club, as in jerk-offs. And maybe he did. It's not like the fucking Zapruder footage. I'm not going to go back and back into the left and rewind it and see what did he say. I don't care that much. But I thought he said Bullet Club. Let's say he said Pullet Club, right? Pullet Club, five-knuckle shuffle. John Cena is very clever when it comes to the dick jokes that he's able to sneak in here on this show. So now, if we could only get Roman Reigns to go back to talking about people's nuts. I'm surprised the tater tot didn't make it into that YouTube list of the top 10 catchphrases. They had singles matches throughout the night with the 6 competitors in the Money in the Bank ladder match. I guess it's 6 now, not 7. 7 never made any sense to me anyway. Why would you have an odd number? It's stupid. 6 is better. So Jericho submitted to Cesaro in the sharpshooter. Alberto Del Rio pretty much squashed Sami Zayn. I didn't get that at all. like not even close to being competitive. He also called Sami Zayn a dog in Spanish before the match, called him a paper boy. Don't forget cab driver. Can't forget that one. Vince Russo thinks he's a cab driver. It's like if Russo spotted Zayn in his car in New York, Russo would just, he would just open the door and get in, and he would, you know, tell him to, like, take me to Times Square, bro, okay? Just take me to Times Square. Whatever you do, don't take the FDR, okay, bro? Don't take the FDR. There's always traffic on the FDR, bro. When I worked for TNA, I never saw traffic like that, bro. Okay, anyway. I lapse into Russo randomly every now and then. Dean Ambrose pinned Kevin Owens with Dirty Deeds. I pitched the idea on Twitter. I want to mention this here. I pitched the idea on Twitter as this match was going on, or when Ambrose won, of Ambrose winning Money in the Bank and then cashing in before SummerSlam. So he cashes in like RVD did. He cashes in advance, makes it very well known that at SummerSlam, I'm cashing in, I'm going to be part of this championship match. And it turns into a Shield triple threat with Rollins, Reigns, and Ambrose. When I tweeted it out, a lot of you loved the idea, provided, and this is important, provided that Ambrose wins the title. Well, I'm sorry to burst your bubble. Ambrose ain't winning the title. So you're going to have to just let that one go for now. But I could see, here's how I could see the top three matches going at SummerSlam here. I could see the top three matches being the Shield triple threat for the championship. Let's say if Ambrose was to win the briefcase and then he can cash in early. We then have AJ Styles and John Cena maybe in their third match, their blow-off match to their feud, whatever stipulation they use. Brock Lesnar against Bray Wyatt, because I'm racking my brain trying to figure out who the hell is Brock Lesnar going to face if he doesn't wrestle Roman for the title. And this is all provided that he doesn't get knocked out and concussed by Mark Hunt. And I'm thinking, okay, who could he wrestle? Now, Randy Orton is on his way back. Actually, Orton's name just popped into my head. That could very well be an opponent for Brock. I don't want to say Orton's made of glass, but I know Orton's had a, you know, he's had a couple of broken collarbones. Would Orton be willing to take suplex after suplex after suplex from Brock? That I don't know. But that would be a marquee match that has not happened since Brock came back. You could do Brock and Orton. Orton's supposed to be back, I think, next month. You could do that. Bray Wyatt popped in my head because that's also a match we haven't seen. They started teasing it. It was going to be the WrestleMania match. They changed their minds. I still think that they're going to end up doing this match at some point. So whether it's Brock and Orton or Brock and Bray, there's your top three matches right there. And then on top of that, you can squeeze in Charlotte and Sasha for the women's title. And I do like the Paige Van Zandt idea that I proposed earlier. Get kind of work her in there. And it's funny, you know, I gave the example of Austin and Tyson. Just as an example of using the celebrity to help, you know, get the other person over. And they did that at SummerSlam many years ago. Actually, in 94, they did that at SummerSlam. They had Walter Payton, who's one of the all-time great NFL players. He's since passed away, unfortunately. But he was in the corner of Razor Ramon for his match against Diesel. He was there to counteract Shawn Michaels. So again, it'd be kind of a similar thing where you could have Paige Van Zandt in the corner of Sasha Banks to counteract Dana Brooke in the corner of Charlotte. The more I think about that idea, I really like that. So those are four matches right there that I could very easily see headlining SummerSlam. Speaking of Sasha, during the show, I asked someone to mock up Sasha's face on the side of a milk carton, which two of you did. You guys are awesome. She's been gone forever, it feels like. I mean, main event and superstars don't count, okay, because nobody watches those shows. Whenever I see these lists of the most watched WWE Network shows for the week, like the top 10 or top 15 or whatever, I never see superstars or main event. Nobody is watching the show. So I post this online about Sasha and the milk carton. Literally a minute after I post this, Sasha tweets out, "I'm still here." So clearly she must have been getting tweets from a lot of different people asking, "Where are you? Where the hell are you?" And, you know, if she felt the need to tweet that out. So I'm not the only one who feels that way. And I'm glad to see that she's still alive and breathing. Now they just got to get her back on my TV. They announced the Ambrose Asylum is going to return this Monday with Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins as his guests. I saw the graphic with all three of them when they put that up on the screen, and I thought to myself, I was like, whoa. they took my pitch for the triple threat at SummerSlam a little too literally there. I thought they were announcing a match. It took me a second to realize it was just an interview segment. But then I'm also looking at this and I'm going, wait a minute. Hold on a second here. The last time we saw Dean Ambrose hosting an Ambrose Asylum, Stephanie was in the ring and she canceled the show. So unless it turns out that Shane secretly booked this segment while he's away on vacation, by the way, unless they reveal that, this makes no sense. Apparently, Stephanie is doing her best Dana White impression. She's banning the segment and then unbanning it. Main event was fun. It only went 5 minutes. AJ, Anderson, and Gallows, they beat the New Day. John Cena ran out for the save. And the Babyfaces stood tall to end the show. Thank God for TakeOver. Lucha Underground from this past week, we learned that Ultima Lucha 2 is only 4 weeks away. So that means the season is almost over, which makes me very sad. Black Lotus is starting to suspect that Dario Cueto may be lying to her about who killed her parents. And Dario says, look, if you can't trust me, who can you trust? And he tells her that at Ultima Lucha, she will have a match against Dragon Azteca Jr. We had Marty the Moth and Killshot in a match that ended very quickly by countout. Killshot briefly got his dog tags back. Marty attacked him, stole them again. So I would guess this is going to end probably at Ultima Lucha. Maybe they'll have a dog collar match. See what I did there? Mr. Cisco is in a prison jumpsuit being interrogated by his former partner Cortez Castro and Joey Ryan. This comes after Cisco caught them rummaging through Dario Cueto's office last week. He threatened to tell Dario, so they had to blow their cover and arrest him. Captain walks in. She wants Cisco to wear a wire because she thinks it's more than just drug trafficking and murder that Dario is guilty of. She thinks he is the linchpin to the end of days. And I can't say that without thinking of Schwarzenegger on SmackDown promoting his movie. The end of days! The end of days! I still remember that promo. We had Jack Evans and PJ Black against Drago and Aerostar in a nunchucks match. They had nunchucks hanging from four different parts of the temple. This was a pretty wild match. They brawled all over the place, in the stands. At one point, I had to go back and listen to this because I had to make sure I wasn't hearing things. So the heels are in the ring, right? Evans and Black are in the ring. They're about to go outside. So they probably just knocked the baby faces out of the ring. They're in the ring, and they do like a quick air guitar riff. And they actually piped in an actual guitar riff. So I'm not nuts. That's what they did here. And it was hilariously cheesy. So Drago and Aerostar, they won. After Drago did his dragon's tail rolling cradle, he got the pin on Jack Evans after spitting mist in his face. So Jack the Dragon Slayer, we have Drago getting his revenge on him. Main event was a 12-person tag, 6-on-6. Son of Havoc, Sexy Star, Rey Mysterio Jr., Prince Puma, The Mac, and Tejano against Phoenix, King Cuerno, Ibelis, Chavo Guerrero, Taya, and Johnny Mundo. Members of the winning team will wrestle each other next week, and the winner of that will get the title match against Matanza at Ultima Lucha. So before the match, Chavo comes out. He's about to get in the ring, and we see Pentagon Jr. in his motorized... I always laugh. Just the sight of Pentagon and his makeup and mask and everything wheeling himself to the ring is just comical to me. So he wheels himself out. He reveals that he's actually much better now. He stands up out of the wheelchair and broke Chavo's arm to take his spot in the match. As if I needed any more of a reason to love Pentagon Jr. He just gave me another one. So this was all action, as you might imagine, with 12 people out there. King Cuerno. I have to say this about King Cuerno. King Cuerno has to have the best tope, or dive through the ropes, call it whatever you want, in all of wrestling. He just comes at you like a missile. 619 by Rey Mysterio to Johnny Mundo. Prince Puma goes up top of the 630. Mundo knocks Rey into the ropes. And so Puma is crotched. I was going to say crouched. That doesn't make sense. He was crotched by Mysterio. So then Mundo hits the Spanish fly. He pins Prince Puma to win the match for his team. So they get the win. clearly what they're doing here is they're setting up a singles match between Rey and Puma at Ultima Lucha. So the show ended with Katrina in King Cuerno's, I guess his cabin, I guess it looked like. And she brought Mil Muertes back to life once again. This guy's got more lives than Michael Myers. So Mil Muertes is back. So Ultima Lucha's coming together pretty clearly to me. I would guess Pentagon's going to win the six-way next week. He'll probably get the title shot against Matanza. And he can avenge his broken back. You throw in Rey and Puma, which I think could be a hell of a match. King Cuerno and Mil Muertes. Probably Killshot and Marty the Moth, and then Black Lotus against Dragon Azteca. So I think that's a pretty full card right there. Now, if they do what they did last season, which is break it up into two episodes, I think they'll probably have to add, you know, two or three matches, get Cage in there. Maybe they'll have a trios title defense, and you'll have a pretty stacked card. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the six man next week, I should say six person, since there are. There are some vaginas in there, so I have to make sure I don't misspeak. Actually, there may only be one vagina. I think it's Taya, right? No, Taya and Ivelisse. I think they're on the same team, so that's two vaginas. And two vaginas is always better than one. Anyway, mailbag time. If you have questions, you can email me, thesolemonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. Brianna from Jackson, Mississippi. Do you ever see quote-unquote safe WWE superstars like The Rock or John Cena ever doing legit unfiltered shoot interviews, not necessarily while they are still contracted to WWE, but after their 10 years have ended? Also, what shoot interview from any superstar from any era would you like to hear the most if they haven't conducted one already? I don't see guys like Rock or Cena ever shooting on WWE, if that's what you mean. Like, shooting doesn't necessarily mean bashing. You could have a shoot interview where somebody is praising someone. You can have a shoot interview where somebody is talking about an incident that happened backstage, but they're not necessarily burying people. I think people tend to think of the word shoot in like a negative context. Oh, he shot on him. Oh my God. Like, he said horrible things. And that's not really what it means. But, you know, Rock and Cena, they don't have any reason to, even to bash the company. Why are they going to bash the company? What possible reason would they have to bash the company? They have no need for the payday. It's not like, hey, you know, I could do a shoot interview and make 10 grand. Like they need the money. I mean, give me a break. I'm sure a lot of the shoot interviews you see, they do them because they're getting paid nicely for it. It's not a bad way to spend 2 hours or 3 hours bitching about this person and that person, getting your check and going home. Although I'm sure a lot of them, if they're smart, I'm sure Kevin Nash, for example, all the kayfabe commentaries he's done, I'm sure he gets his money up front. But, you know, safe stars like Rock or Cena, they just have no reason to do it. Now, that being said, the one shoot interview that I would love to see is The Undertaker, which is another one I don't think will ever happen. I think the closest we may get is if Steve Austin finally does get him on his podcast, which I believe he is going to eventually appear on Austin's podcast. But it's not as though he's going to be, like, shooting hard on WWE. And I know... Like, I know he did the interview with Michael Landsberg. I want to say it was around 2002 or 2003. Is it on the record or off the record? On the record. I guess you could call that a shoot interview. That was probably the first and earliest shoot interview that The Undertaker ever did. He was out of character. Landsberg was calling him Mark Calloway. He asked him about what happened backstage with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 14 when Shawn supposedly was thinking about not doing the job for Steve Austin. Like, it was Undertaker answering questions in an element that we've never seen before. I have not heard him give that kind of interview since, but I want something bigger than that. It's almost like he's had a whole other career for himself even after that. I mean, that was 14 years ago when he did that interview. A lot of shit has happened in the 14 years since. So when you take those 14 years that have gone by and you take the initial 12 or 13 years that he spent in WWE and you put them all together, that's a pretty interesting career right there, especially with a guy like him. So if I had one person to pick, it would be The Undertaker. Because, I mean, that's a guy that's seen it all. He knows where all the bodies are buried, so to speak. And I sense that The Undertaker, I don't know him personally, but I sense that The Undertaker would probably be more of a straight shooter than, say, Hulk Hogan or John Cena. who I listen to Cena sometimes in these interviews, and he's very corporate, and you know, like, you could predict exactly what's going to come out of his mouth before it even comes out of his mouth. He's like a robot. I don't think The Undertaker is a robot. And I hope that one day Austin, at least Austin, will be able to get him on there. Drew from Orlando. I was listening to one of those What Culture Wrestling clips on YouTube that ran down a list of the 13 times Undertaker lost clean. On the list was a match that Undertaker had with Hulk Hogan, presumably in early 1990. It was described as a four-minute match that was an extra on the WrestleMania 6 VHS. Hogan won clean with a distraction roll-up after Undertaker accidentally bumped into Paul Bearer. I had never heard about this, and thinking about the timeline, it doesn't make any sense because Undertaker didn't debut until Survivor Series in 1990, and if I remember correctly, Brother Love was Undertaker's manager until early 91. I know the VHS for WrestleMania 6 would have been released much later into 1990, but even so, the time frame does not add up. Do you have any insight into this? I haven't seen the video, but I'm going to guess that they just fucked up because that does not make any sense. I'm going to guess they're probably thinking of the Tuesday in Texas match. Tuesday in Texas match, Undertaker got, I believe Hogan shoved Undertaker into a chair, but I think Flair was holding the chair. I don't think he was pushed into Paul Bearer. He did get rolled up. It was kind of a distraction roll up. Hogan threw ashes in his eyes and he pinned him. But that is weird though, because again, I don't think Undertaker got pushed into Paul Bearer. It was definitely not a 4 minute match. And that was the end of 91, so why that match would have been on a WrestleMania 6 VHS, I have no idea. So, that's very weird. But I'm going to assume they're thinking of that Tuesday in Texas match. Until somebody can prove me otherwise, I'd love to see the evidence of this supposed match they had. I mean, I looked up, like, house show results and stuff when I first got the email from Drew. I mean, there aren't any sort of live event appearances for The Undertaker until the fall of 1990. You know, back he was doing the whole Kane the Undertaker thing for a while before they just made him the Undertaker. But that was later in the year, so there was no record of any match that he would have had with Hogan. Nathan, I was watching Backlash 2003 where Goldberg made his WWE debut, and even though Goldberg was the clear babyface and The Rock was playing heel at the time, for some reason a lot of the fans that night booed Goldberg. They also did the same thing at Bad Blood when he went up against Chris Jericho. I just want to get your insight onto why they were booing Goldberg. Well, my best guess, Goldberg was a WCW guy. And for years and years and years, WWE just beat it into you that WCW, right? WCW, they're the enemy, WCW. So when the WCW guys came in, with the exception maybe of a few, I mean, look at the Booker T. Buff Bagwell match. That's a great example of it. The match that killed the whole concept of even, you know, keeping WCW as a separate brand goes back. You could trace it back to that match. Why did that match not get over? Why did that match go over like a fart in church? Well, because maybe you had two WCW announcers at ringside. You had two WCW wrestlers in the ring with a WCW referee on a WWF show after a quote-unquote war, where WWE constantly beat it into their fans that those guys are the enemy, they're trying to put us out of business. They're the Bush League, we're the big time. So, kind of makes sense that their fans were not going to take very kindly to a WCW guy. So Goldberg comes in, and who knows, I mean, maybe there's WWF fans that look at him and go, oh, who's this Steve Austin knockoff, this bald guy with a goatee, what's he trying to prove here? You know? And also, it's not a crime to not be a Goldberg fan. So I think it was a combination of him being a WCW guy and other people just not liking Goldberg. Rock was so damn entertaining, even as a heel. How could you hate on The Rock? That was Hollywood Rock. That's my favorite incarnation of The Rock. And he only did it for like 3 months. What a waste. Maybe that was part of it. Hollywood Rock was the best Rock. Goldberg never stood a chance. Who would cheer for Goldberg over him? And Jericho, you know, the whole Jericho thing, that's what makes me think it was more of a, hey, he's not one of us kind of thing, because that is weird. You know, Jericho is a heel. Why would they cheer him and boo Goldberg? It had to be the WCW connection. It had to be. Michael from Lusk, Wyoming, with all the controversy over the Hogan Sting match at Starrcade 97, how would you have booked it to make it better than it was? Oh, I would have had, I don't know, Nick Patrick actually do a fast count. I think that would have helped out quite a bit. Wouldn't have made Bret Hart look like a bully when he came out and punched the referee in the face. What a prick. Yeah, I would have had the referee do the fast count like he was supposed to. David from Camp Casey, South Korea. WrestleMania 10 had Bret Hart. WrestleMania 20 had Chris Benoit. WrestleMania 30 had Daniel Bryan. What great technical wrestler will end WrestleMania 40 as the world champion? Now, David goes on to say he would guess Jason Jordan. Jason Jordan is only 27 years old. He's got the size. He looks like $1 million. So he wants to know what I think. And the funny thing about that is my answer, like, as I first read the question, my immediate answer was Chad Gable. So I think you and I are on the same wavelength here. You can't go wrong with either one. If they keep getting better and better, I mean, WrestleMania 40 is what, 7 years away? 7 or 8 years away? These guys are only going to get better. I'd say either one of them could be world champion come time for WrestleMania 40. Who knows? Maybe they're wrestling each other at WrestleMania 40. I'm sure they'd have a hell of a match. But I don't think you could go wrong with either one of those guys. Marcus, both pro wrestling and mixed martial arts are brutal sports in which the risk of injury is high and could impact your life in big ways. Which sport is the toughest of the two? Well, I've never tried either one of them, so I'm the wrong person to be asking that question or answering that question. If my opinion, I might give the slight edge to pro wrestling because, you know, I've heard even MMA fighters acknowledge how brutal the schedule, at least in WWE, how brutal the schedule is. You know, if you're an MMA fighter, you're not running the same kind of schedule that a WWE performer is. You also have the issue of, you know, MMA is real. Pro wrestling is predetermined. In MMA, it's about winning. Now, there are exceptions. I mean, you'll have a guy, let's say Conor McGregor, who's a great fighter. But let's say Conor McGregor was average at best. Really wasn't that great. But he had the charisma and the personality that he has, and he could talk, and he could sell tickets just by moving his mouth. I would tend to think that Dana White and UFC would probably give him chances that any other average fighter wouldn't have because they see the box office potential in a guy like that. So that can happen. But by and large, in MMA, you need to win to keep your job, and you get bigger fights and you make more money. That's how it works. In wrestling, you can be the best wrestler in the world. You could be an amateur wrestling like god and come in and you could be a great pro wrestler and know all the different fancy moves and everything. And if you can't talk or you're not charismatic enough or you're too short or somebody in the front office doesn't like you, you're probably not going to go very far. You're not going to be making John Cena money. You're not going to be making Roman Reigns money. You have to find a way to get yourself over, no matter how athletically gifted you may be. That's not enough. MMA, you either have it or you don't. Wrestling, you've got to navigate the politics and all that bullshit. It's a very unique business, a hell of a lot more so than MMA. But the best person to answer that question would be Brock Lesnar. It would be Bobby Lashley. It would be Ken Shamrock, Dan Severn, you know, Josh Barnett. Josh Barnett is another one. Right, Jim Ross is a tag team partner for New Japan Pro Wrestling. Josh Barnett, he's done MMA, he's done pro wrestling. So they would be, I would be interested to hear their take on that. And I'd be interested to hear your take on it too. I think if this ends up on tracks, this could make for a very interesting debate. Danny says, I get the impression Joe Buck is hated by many. What's your opinion of him as an announcer? Do you think he is the Michael Cole of baseball, given how hated both of them are? No, actually, Michael Cole at least tries to show some real human emotion at times. I wanted to use Danny's question here, even though it really doesn't have too much to do with wrestling, because I was reminded of a clip, and I would love any reason to play this clip, and now I have that reason. I found this years ago on YouTube, and I laughed my ass off. I'm going to play it here for you now. This is Jay Moore's impression of Joe Buck. And it sums up, I think, the main reason why a lot of people hate Joe Buck. And I think the impression is just spot on.
Now they have Joe Buck. Everything I say is exactly the same from start to finish. We hope to have kickoff, and shortly under an hour, there's a fan on the field lighting himself on fire. The Giants have scored 17 consecutive touchdowns, setting a record in the NFL.
Holy shit, you're right.
That's Mark DeShera's fifth home run of the game. Two grand slams, 14 RBIs on the day. A man has just parachuted onto the pitcher's mound, killing CC Sabathia. Nothing says loving like something from the oven. That's why this game is brought to you by Edmunds Cookies.
And we'll do one more here. Thomas from Tacoma, Washington. Just a heads up, I used your Audible trial to get Daniel Bryan's book. So I want to say thank you to Thomas for that. Buy or sell on rewriting history and having either CM Punk beat Triple H at Night of Champions 2011 or having Booker T win the world title from Triple H at WrestleMania 19. I am going to go with Punk. I'm going to buy on Punk beating Triple H and sell on Booker, as irritating as that was, because I think when Punk came back, Punk had so much momentum that summer, and it's amazing he was able to retain as much of it as he did. When I think back to the whole timeline of events from the pipe bomb to him beating Cena and going away for a few weeks and then bringing him back, beating Cena again, which is, again, something that not too many people have done, beat John Cena back-to-back pay-per-views. The guy was on fire. He was the hottest thing in wrestling. And then Triple H got involved, and they had a match. And, you know, he got to kick out of the pedigree a few times, but in the end, Triple H got the win. And then Punk kind of went along, and he beat Del Rio, and he had a long title reign. So I'm like, something doesn't fit here. This guy has all the momentum in the world. He gets two big wins over Cena. Take out the Triple H stuff for a second. He beats Del Rio, wins the championship at Madison Square Garden, and goes on to hold the title for 434 days. But right in the middle there, you've got this win that's just sitting there. That was never avenged. It never went anywhere after that. It was just a match, and Triple H beat him, and Triple H went back to wearing a suit and tie. And I didn't understand it then. I don't understand it now. And I think if I could rewrite history between those two, that's the one I would change. The way they built up the Booker T story to have him lose is also ridiculous. But it was a world title match on the undercard of WrestleMania 19. It wasn't even the main event. Changing it, not changing it, it doesn't really change history all that much. That Punk win, though, it's just, I don't know. It just shouldn't have happened. That Punk loss, I should say, it just shouldn't have happened. So of the two, that's the one I would change. That's going to wrap up the mailbag. I want to mention one more thing here. Actually, two more things, because as I was doing the show, my phone was kind of flashing at me here, and I was glancing down. And actually, I may as well talk about this now, because I'm getting a lot of angry tweets from people about this. Apparently, Matt Hardy, as I was recording the show, he posted a tweet. Now, tonight is the TNA pay-per-view. They have their Slammiversary show tonight. Tonight is the big Full Metal Mayhem match between Hardy and Brother Nero. So they're having their match. So I talked at the top of the show about all the horrible stuff that's been happening in Orlando, especially this morning. So Matt Hardy posts this. I'm in Orlando, where the horrific shooting took place. My condolences to all. Let me entertain you with my handling of Brother Nero tonight. And people are very upset about this. I could see why. You know, if you're going to tweet condolences, 50 people dead, just tweet condolences and just be done with it. Don't start mixing the self-promotion with that, because that just comes off as tacky and tasteless. Don't mix the two. Having said that, Matt Hardy did not intend to offend the victims of what happened this morning. Matt Hardy is not looking to insult them. I think he was just a lapse in judgment, lumping two tweets into one. Just keep them separate. It was just an error in judgment, that's all. And people are losing their minds now. Matt Hardy is not a bad person who's out to tell you that, hey, the TNA pay-per-view is more important than what's going on in Orlando right now. Okay, he probably has people in Orlando. Look, I mean, TNA runs their shows out of Orlando. So I'm sure him and everybody there are affected by what's going on. They're very upset about what's going on. And in their minds, yeah, they're going to try to take your minds off of it. Like I said that earlier with this podcast, right? It's just a wrestling podcast, but with all the stuff that's going on in the world, if it's 90 minutes or 2 hours, that you don't have to think about that or listen to that or worry about that, and you listen to this instead, great. It's an escape from what's going on. I think that's the same thing he's basically trying to communicate here. He just did it in a really poor way. So, I wouldn't hold it against the guy. I wouldn't rake him over the coals or anything like that. So, the last thing I wanted to mention here, and it's terrible, like all this death and destruction and shootings and all the horrible things that have been happening, it feels like, over the last week or so. There was another death this week, not a violent one, but a death nonetheless of a celebrity that I just wanted to touch on briefly, because it's somebody who I was a fan of her work, and it didn't get a whole lot of play. TMZ had a story about it, but Teresa Saldana, who some of you listening, I know you were fans of the show The Commish. I was a fan of the TV show The Commish, which aired on ABC in the mid-90s. She played the wife of Michael Chiklis, who on that show was the police commissioner of a town. Of course, Chiklis went on to be on The Shield, which is my favorite TV show. So she was on that show. That's how I originally knew her. And her story is very interesting. So she passed away this week. She was only 61. Apparently she was battling some kind of an illness, an undisclosed illness. I don't know if it was cancer or what. So she passed away very young. And her story, though, she was an actress in the 70s into the early 80s, kind of on the rise. And I want to say it was 82. It was in the early 80s. She was the victim of a very, very violent crime. She was being stalked by a man, like an obsessed fan. And this actually has some relevance after what happened Friday night in Orlando with that singer who got shot. So apparently she was being stalked for like a year and a half. Didn't even realize it. And the guy who was stalking her, I think, called her mother. Somehow he got her mother's phone number. Called her mother. He was posing as someone that he wasn't. And I guess it was convincing enough that the mother gave this guy her daughter's address out in L.A. So he went to L.A. He was waiting for her outside of her building. And when she came out one day, he walked up to her and said, "Are you Teresa Saldana?" And she said, "Yes." And I want to say it was a hunting knife that he pulled out. And he started stabbing her repeatedly with this hunting knife. So hard and so violently was he stabbing her that I think he broke or bent the blade. I mean, she lost like over 90% of the blood in her body. The only thing that saved her life was, I think there was a delivery person who happened to see what was going on. He intervened and he saved her life, because by all accounts, she should not have survived that. But she did. And in effect, what happened was she became a bigger star because of it. And she actually ended up starring in a, I think it was a made-for-TV movie, but she ended up starring in a movie many years later about her story as herself. And I've never seen that movie before. I would like to see it because that sounds very interesting. I'm sure that was not an easy thing for her to do. But these are things I only learned like after I initially was watching The Commish. When I was watching The Commish, I was a teenager. You know, I didn't know any of this stuff. It was actually my mother who pointed it out. I had no idea that she was the victim of a crime and the details of it and what she went through. So she went through hell, but she came out of it okay. She survived. Unfortunately, the girl on Friday night, she didn't. But anyway, I just wanted to make mention of it. I always enjoyed her on the show. I thought The Commish was a quality TV show. I've actually been catching up on it. My brother bought me the DVDs as a birthday gift a couple of years ago. And it's been sitting here, because I don't buy DVDs anymore. So he bought me the box set of all the seasons, and it's been sitting here in the plastic. I'm such a prick. It's been sitting here in the plastic. I never opened it. And I think a few months ago I got sick and I had nothing else to do. So I'm like, you know what? Now's as good a time as any to kind of bust this thing open. And I did. So I've actually been watching episodes of The Commish over the last like 3 or 4 months. I've been catching up on them. It's kind of eerie. And then I hear this, and it's very sad to hear what happened. So I just wanted to make mention of that. Unfortunately, a lot of death, a lot of horrible news going on this week. And sometimes it's a good thing to have pro wrestling to watch and to talk about, good or bad or whatever. At least it takes your mind off what's going on in the world. So follow me on Twitter. @SolomonSter is my handle. Don't forget you can vote in our Raw poll after the show goes off the air every Monday night. Thumbs up, thumbs down. Also, don't forget, we have the t-shirt contest, effective immediately. The deadline, the cutoff, is 10 a.m. Eastern next Sunday. Make a $10 or more donation via PayPal to the show. You will automatically be entered into our free t-shirt contest. And if you've already bought a shirt in our store on Pro Wrestling Tees, you're already in. And we're going to read off all the names next week. We'll have a random drawing. We're going to pick two winners. Two people are going to win the t-shirt of their choice from our store on Pro Wrestling Tees. And we'll ship that out to you. We did that last time. People got their shirts. They were very happy. Got a huge reaction the last time we did this contest. So we're doing it again. Another PayPal Rumble next Sunday. So if you want to be part of that, you can get the donation in. And we'll pick winners next Sunday here on episode 446. So until then, be well. Stay safe. Especially after this weekend. Stay safe. Especially if you're in Orlando. Take care, guys.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. The Solomonster sounds off.
I'm just saying, I don't know, with New Day, you got three black guys out there. Why Francesca?
You want to call it Tyrone the Trombone?
Okay, that's racist.
Well, no, it's... I'm just
racist, no.
I'm not racist. Go to Hulk Hogan for that. That's not me.
You know, usually the people that go, I'm not racist, yeah, those are the racists.
Solomonster sounds off.
Since 2007, the Solomonster sounds off. Available at thesolomonster.com, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes, and more.
Solomonster sound off.